Flip, 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 flip. Flip Weekly!
What's up? Matt here from flipweekly.com. This is the Flip Weekly podcast, the second ever podcast I've recorded. I was happy with the reception of last week's podcast. This is obviously going to be a weekly recurrence, the exact same as the Flip Weekly newsletter, which you can subscribe to at flipweekly.com. I'm coming at you with everything I've bought in thrift stores this week, everything I've sold on eBay and Marketplace. The goal here is to make money reselling items, and wow, we have a big one this week. Just to remind you though, you can go onto Flip Weekly's Instagram right now and you will be able to see the giveaway that we've launched to celebrate Flip Weekly creating a podcast. Yeah. So the giveaway is very easy to enter. All you have to do is like the post on Instagram or follow Flip Weekly. There's instructions on Flip Weekly's Instagram. You can win one of three Vinny's gift cards. So the gift cards are valued at $50 each. There's three to be won. All you have to do is interact with the post, and then if you're the winner, notified via the podcast. I've been told that the date that was on the Instagram post was the 30th of February. So that's incorrect. There is no 30th of February. Whoever decided how many days there were in February decided to only have 27 or 28. So not 30 or 31 like everyone else, 27 or 28. Just depending on, I guess, the mood of the year. I'm not sure how many days there are this year, but the giveaway will be announced on the podcast on the 27th of February. Just know that entries close on the 25th, winner announced on the 27th. Like I said, all you have to do to win, follow the account, like the post. You can also share the post for a bonus entry, or you can tag your friends on Instagram for additional entries. And then, you know, if you win, you get, I'll say your Instagram handle on the podcast. I'll reach out to you, and then you have to give a stranger on the internet your address, which is me. But everything's cool. So yeah, I was happy with the reception of the podcast last week. I haven't done anything like this before. This is the first ever podcast that I've been on, created. I generally avoid anything that isn't text-based in my life. In the past, if I was to do any sort of media interviews, I would always request to do it via email or messenger. I don't really like being on the spot. You know, I've done a few stints on television and I'd always request any sort of questions in advance. I don't think I do that well under pressure when it comes to answering questions or talking about myself. You know, I like to think of myself as quick-witted in any other situation, but when it comes to instances like this, I'm horrible. So yeah, this podcast is all new to me. You'll probably understand when you listen to this that everything's new. I think that the medium will be good going forward so that you're able to listen to the newsletter instead of reading. It's much more relaxing. Not saying that my voice is relaxing. I think that listening is easier than reading. So this week we have everything that I've bought, everything I've sold, just like the newsletter. I'm going to remind you to pack your items secure because I didn't. I'm also going to do the reads. This week we have somebody that is not happy. First hate mail, which is cool. So we'll be going through all that. But to start off with, we're going to go through everything that I've bought in thrift stores this week. And, you know, I didn't spend much money, but boy, there's some items here that are going to sell for a lot. The first item is something that I don't really understand the appeal of. I've bought and sold this item before. It is a Big Mouth Billy Bass. What that is, it's a talking fish. You would have seen it on television. You would have seen it at friends' houses. Hopefully not. It goes on walls in, I guess, bar rooms, man caves, maybe in clubs and pubs. I don't know. It's a fish that you hang on the wall. When you walk past it, it likes to sing. It likes to repeat itself. There are only a few songs that these fish sing. They're mainly Don't Worry, Be Happy. And there's also Take Me to the Water. Now, I think Don't Worry, Be Happy is a popular song. I think that it's a good song when sung by anything other than a fish on a wall. And Take Me to the Water, I don't know if that's an original song or a song created specifically for this product. I can't imagine a mainstream song being Take Me to the Water. In what context would that ever come about? Like I've said, this is a product I've picked up before at a garage sale. This time it was within a thrift store. It was $10. I remember walking past it and just being like, I'm not going to pick this up, surely. Not again. It takes batteries. You have to make sure that it works. There's a high chance that you get it home and this thing just doesn't sing. I mean, that would be good because, you know, you don't have to hear it. But when I see an electronic item like this in a thrift store for $10, knowing myself that it sells for over $100, I'm a glass half empty person when it comes to thrift stores, but I think that there's no way this thing works. Like, let's be real. This has to be tested out the back. Maybe they've looked it up on Google Lens. Maybe they haven't. But when I see it on the floor, I think it's been tested and it doesn't work. However, the gambler side of me wants to take it home and test it out because 10 into over 100 is the sort of margins that I want. So I decide, yes, I'm going to pick this up. $10. It's not that expensive to test and, you know, the risk versus reward is there. I checked the comps for this on eBay. Within Australia, this thing sells for big money. We have three recent comps. They are $169.99, $179.99, and $130. The latter with postage, so $150. They are more rare and more expensive within Australia. I think that the selling price overseas in different countries is less. It's something that you would need to look for. But here in Australia, these big mouth Billy Bass sell for over $150 in most cases. Just like anything though, you need to check it's not a reproduction or a cheap Alibaba reproduction. When I looked on eBay in the thrift store for sold comps, you know, I've bought and sold this before, but I still wanted to double check. I looked for which ones were selling for, you know, $180. And I could see that the ones that were selling were made in America, in Texas, and they had an insignia on the back of it. I could see that in the photo of the listing. So I checked the back of the fish in the thrift store, which is a sentence that should never be uttered, and I could see that it was the exact same. So we had a like for like comparison. So I picked it up, $180, like $10, $180. Hell yeah. When I got to the cash register, the lady of course said, you know, keep the receipt just in case it doesn't work. I said, yes, I'll do that. I'll be back in an instant if it doesn't. When I brought it home, I took the back off, chucked in some new batteries. Oh, that's the other thing. If you're reselling items, you should probably have a drawer full of batteries or a pillowcase full of batteries. I put the batteries in, turned it around, waved my hand in front of the sensor, and this fish sung. It was glorious. Started to scream, Take Me to the Water. Don't Worry, Be Happy. It sung all of the songs. It sung them perfectly. No issues with it. It was from 1999, so this thing is quite old and it still works. So I was able to list that up. I decided to list it a tiny bit cheaper than the $180 comp, just, you know, for a quickish sale. I did $139.99. This is one of those products that you would find in a thrift store or a garage sale, 100% a garage sale. You would see like a $5 price tag on it. I've bought one before, and I think the price tag on it was like $5 or $10. It was something really, really small. I mean, at the end of the day, it's a fish on a wall. Like, let's be real. It's a fish on a wall that sings. It looks ridiculous. It looks like it should be worth, like, negative money, if that's a thing. Somehow, it's worth $100+. If you see one out in the wild, look for the year it was manufactured. The Big Mouth Billy Bass is the one that's worth the $180. You can also get the alternative versions of this, like anything, you know, if it's a tiny bit different, it can sell for more money. You can get like Halloween versions of this, which I think can sell for close to like $300. Garage sales where people are cleaning out their garages, you know, everyone will be looking at the tools, trying to make money on that, and you go over and buy the fish. Moving on to another product that I picked up this week. It was $3 from a thrift store. It was impossible to ignore. I grew up in the 90s with, you know, my sisters having Polly Pockets, me having the dude version, which I think at the time were Mighty Max, or Action Man had their own Polly Pockets. It wasn't called a Polly Pocket, it was Action Man. These are essentially toys that come in these clamshells. They're miniature versions of doll play sets, I guess you could call it that. They have all of these little intricate details inside of this, you know, 30 centimeter clamshell. You open it up, there's a top and a bottom. They were really popular back in the day, I know. I have home videos of me and my sisters receiving presents that were Polly Pockets, that were things like that. And these playsets, they came with little mini figures. So, you know, you get Lego now, it all comes with little Harry Potter, little Hermione, little Ron. Over time, just think of what happens to these little, think of a Lego minifigure, and then think of like a 90s version of that that is a different brand of like Polly Pocket of whatever. Think of what happens to those 3 centimeter tall minifigures. They get lost, they get misplaced, they probably get eaten, and over time they become almost the most valuable part of these toys. I came across a Beauty and the Beast Polly Pocket. It wasn't branded Polly Pocket, but it was a variation of that. Beauty and the Beast, I don't know much about, besides it's about a woman and a beast, and it's Disney, so there's a huge market for that. I saw the clamshell in the thrift store. What I immediately did was shake it just to see if there was any loose parts inside, because I know that when you're buying these things, you want to get the minifigures. You want to get the items that are generally eaten by young children. So I shook it. I could hear something inside. I could hear what sounded like one little thing moving around. So I opened it up and I could see the giant cat, the beast. And the beast was laying on the ground, and I was like, oh great, like this, the beast is within the Polly Pocket. And I didn't remember, I don't know too much, like I said, about Beauty and the Beast, but I assumed there would have been a beauty figure. You know, there's a beast figure, you'd assume there's a beauty figure. So I looked at the thing, you know, it was on the ground, you know, it's pretty far down. So I was kneeling down, I was uncomfortable, I wanted to get up, so I didn't look too hard, but I couldn't see the beauty until I took a photo of it, and then I could see that the beauty was actually at the back of the Polly Pocket against the wall. I thought it was built in, but no, she was standing there in her dress. That meant that there was 2 minifigures with this Polly Pocket, with this Beauty and the Beast miniature playset item thing, whatever. What we have is the Beauty and the Beast playset with 2 minifigures. That sounds complete to me. You know, what other characters are in Beauty and the Beast? You know, it's all there in the title, Beauty and the Beast, that's it. So $3, I mean, I didn't even bother to check this on eBay or Google Lens, because I thought, I checked the back of it and it said 1995, or it said like the 90s. I just knew that, you know, this thing is going to be worth a bit of money because the minifigures are there. So I bought it for $3, brought it home. I decided to look it up, as you do. Yes, it was from 1995. It had the 2 minifigures. It was comping on eBay for, if you didn't have the minifigures, it was comping for $40 plus post. There was one on eBay for $40, $10.60 postage, and it had 17 people watching it. There's a demand for this product. There was also one active listing that had the playset complete. It had a buy it now price of $150 plus post. It was also as an auction with a starting bid of $95. So essentially, it's at least $100 product just for this tiny little playset that you can fit, ironically, within your pocket. I was like, hell yeah, 3 into 100. This is better than the fish 10 into 100. I decided to list it up on eBay for $99.95, buy it now, and Marketplace for $80. But just to give you an idea about these little minifigures that come with it and their scarcity and their rarity, there was a minifigure on eBay of the beast that's within this playset. It's 1 inch tall, it's 3 centimeters, and it was within America, it was listed for $75 plus post, just for the minifigure. So like I said, people lose these over time within their children's stomachs. They're then listed up on eBay for people to complete their sets. You know, I've found the play sets before, not of Beauty and the Beast, but of different characters. And the price difference between a playset with minifigures and the playset without minifigures is huge. You know, I included in the newsletter, you can go on flipweekly.com to see the images, but there's a Batman Forever Riddler playset from Micro Machines. So it's, I don't know if you remember, but there was a Batman movie that came out with Jim Carrey, and Jim Carrey played the Riddler. It's a little playset of Jim Carrey's head. The head by itself with no minifigures is selling on eBay for $15. But if you have the two minifigures, just the two, it's Batman and the Riddler, it's $55. So it's like it's like a 5-time increase just for those two little figures that are, you know, 3 centimeters tall. So when you're buying these things, you want the little people inside of, you want that because that's where the value lies. And if you find these playsets in the wild, they're so easily recognizable. They're a clamshell, they're small, they're usually of people's heads, and they open up. The original Polly Pocket wasn't of a head, it was of something else. But once you see one, once you find one, you'll know exactly what to look for. These are incredibly popular to buy online if they're complete. The Polly Pocket brand has created newer versions. The newer versions obviously aren't worth as much as the older ones. So if you find a Polly Pocket out in the wild, check the date on it. Usually the date's on the back. If it's in the 90s, ka-ching. If it's in the 2000s, maybe not. Use Google Lens at your you have Google Lens at your disposal. But basically, if I was to find one of these Polly Pocket, Micro Machine, Mighty Max heads out in the wild, and it didn't have the minifigures, I probably wouldn't pick it up, just because there is no way you would ever find the minifigures that go with it, just because they're so small. It would have to be a massive stroke of luck to find them. But yeah, they're worth buying because they're small, they look cheap-ish, but if you get the right one, you can make a lot of money. Just like I did with this Beauty and the Beast, where it's $3 into a potential $100. So if you like making $100 and spending $3, keep an eye out for these. Now, the very first item that I bought this week, the talking fish, I had my tinfoil hat on. I thought that it wasn't going to work. I thought that if the staff put it out for only $10 when it's worth over $150, there's no way this thing would have gone out for that low. There's no way this thing would have gone out so cheap. So let's put that tinfoil hat back on for this next item. It was found in a Salvation Army. It was $30. It was a DVD and VCR combo, something that I've found before and I actively keep an eye out for. But on the top of this DVD VCR combo was a sticker, and the sticker said working with a tick next to it, and then underneath it, no remote control, along with a $30 price tag. So the tinfoil hat is on. I've seen this exact same thrift store selling VCRs for $125. And then there's this DVD VCR combo for $30. But apparently it works. I'm very skeptical. It has just the power cord. It doesn't have the cables that go with it. It doesn't have the remote. And I've also bought a Sony radio from this place before where it said it was working, and I took it home and yes, it turned on, but the tape deck didn't work. So I'm thinking to myself that what they do with these combos is they plug it in to the power and it turns on. That I think is the extent of their testing. It's just, does the light turn on? And I mean, it's a pretty bad way to test. Have they not heard the saying lights on, no one home? With that said, I decided to pick it up mostly because last year a DVD VCR combo made my top 10 flips selling for $200 when I bought it for 10. So I knew if I picked this up for 30 bucks, I should be able to get at least $200 for it. When you're flipping items regularly, you will have the type of cables required for things like this. You know, I had the audio video cables here spare. So when I took it home, I was able to turn it on and test it with my monitor, and it worked. I tested it with a DVD, I tested it with a VHS. Both seemed to work fine. I tested all of the buttons. That's one of the things you need to be doing when you're testing out these things. You don't want to just turn it on and see that the light's on, because it's a very good way to have somebody return an item, because just because it turns on doesn't mean that it actually works. You need to test every single thing out. It does take a bit more time. I mean, it doesn't really take that much time. You know, the difference between plugging it in and testing out the buttons is like 60 seconds. So you may as well test out the buttons. If you don't test it out fully, it's like I said, it's a good way to get a return or get a negative feedback if you're selling it on eBay when the buyer finds out that they can't fast forward through Cheer Up Charlie and Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. So test everything out. This thing has comps that are up to like $195 including post. So I decided to put mine up a bit cheaper so that I could get a quick sale. You know, I don't like having these big items sitting around for too long. I prefer smaller items that are worth more money. So I put mine up for $169.95 with free postage. This thing can fit within a Australia Post large box, which is all flat rate. So for me, being on a band 3 with Australia Post gives me a bit of a discount, and it costs around $20 to ship this off within Australia. So you have the 30 bucks that I paid for it, the 20 bucks to ship it. After all fees, it nets me about 90 bucks in profit. So that's what I'm aiming for when I'm buying items in thrift stores. I want to get at least 100 bucks in profit, unless, like I've said this a million times, but unless the item really interests me or I think it's cool, most things I'm picking up are trying to get, you know, at least 100 bucks in profit to make it worthwhile. The next item is the subject of this podcast. It's something that I was really excited to find and something that I've wanted to own myself just based on the nostalgia alone. It is a Nokia 3315. I laugh as I'm saying it because it's just such a ridiculous thing to buy. When I was checking out of the thrift store with the DVD VCR combo that I just talked about, this 3315 was actually behind the counter on a shelf. Can I just talk real quick about the items behind counters at thrift stores? I don't know about you, but I can never read or see what they are, let alone seeing the prices of what they are so I can determine whether or not I want them. If I see something behind the counter, just like I did with this phone, I have to ask the person behind the counter, who is usually incredibly busy serving customers, for them to stretch, reach, get these items down for me so I can buy them or not buy them. And if you're wanting to flick through all the video games, you're going to be standing in front of the counter, taking up time, taking up space. You know, this particular thrift store is incredibly crowded. It's shoulder to shoulder when you're in there, really. You know, when I bought this phone, I could only see the side of it. I could only see little pictures of it. I didn't even know that it was a 3315. I saw the box and I thought, if this is a 3315, I'm going to buy it because I've always wanted to own one. Luckily it was. I quickly opened it. There was people behind me. I felt rushed. So I get the phone to me. I immediately see it's a 3315, the exact type of phone that I had when I was a kid and the exact type of phone that I've wanted to own just for nostalgia purposes. I think that having a 3315 in the house is a great talking point. It's an iconic phone, really. It's what it is. It's a variant of the 3310. If you don't know what this phone is, I know this all sounds like a bunch of jumbled numbers. It's hard to follow. But the 3315 is a variant of the 3310, and the 3310 sold millions upon millions of copies of the phone back when it was released in the early 2000s. This was basically the most popular phone for several years all throughout the world. Every single person I know had one when they were in school, including me, including my sisters. And the reason these things were so popular, I think, were because they had these interchangeable cases, so you could easily slip the front and the back case off. They're just bits of plastic, and you could replace them with your own personalized one. You know, when I showed my sister that I bought this, she was like, oh, I remember spending hours on eBay looking for the perfect case, buying the perfect case. There's just so much nostalgia when it comes to this phone. The other thing about this phone was that it had a really good game of Snake on it, one of those games that you don't get on an iPhone these days. It was just really straightforward, really simple. I didn't know how damn indestructible this phone was until I was sitting inside the offices of finder.com.au, and I was with Jeremy and Fred, the founders of Finder, and we were having a couple of beers, talking shit, trying to come up with some ideas for marketing campaigns, that sort of thing. And we saw that the Nokia 3315 was memed. I mean, it sounds ridiculous, but memed to hell online. If you Google Nokia 3315 indestructible or Nokia 3315 meme, there's just so many different memes out there of like showing that this phone cannot be destroyed. So, you know, there's one that says, if you ever feel useless, remember that there is a cover for a Nokia phone, and it's a picture of the Nokia phone with a cover. There's, if you remember the movie 2012, where the world ends, there's a meme that says, seems that someone just dropped a Nokia 3315. So, you know, people trying to be funny. But yeah, this phone was indestructible, and all of those things led to it being such a huge success. Everybody had these things. So when I saw it for sale at the thrift store for $25, I knew that they were worth money because I've wanted to buy one. I'm not going to keep this one because I want one that's factory sealed, but this was only $25 and it was complete in box. So the reason why I know it was complete in box was I checked it, but the employees of the thrift store also wrote on the box, collectible, complete, with a tick and a circle around their writing. So they've written that this is a collectible, and then they've scribbled all over the box. They've written in pen on the box. What goes through somebody's mind when they say, this thing, somebody's going to want to collect this, so I'm going to write on it? I really don't understand the logic. I probably shouldn't think too far into it. All I can think about when I see that is the scene in Mr. Bean where he paints over the painting of Whistler's mother with his own variation. It's just a pen mark on a box. It shouldn't be there. I hate that it's there. It is there, but whatever. So because I've wanted to buy one of these before, I knew the value that they have on eBay. If you go on eBay and you check out sold comps, they're sort of all over the place. And the reason they're all over the place is because they don't come up that often. If they do come up, it's people that don't know the value. It's just people that had them as a kid or had them when they were a young adult and they're now selling them. Sometimes you can get them for $20 if they come untested. Some of them a bit more expensive. I'm looking at comps now. There's just a silver one by itself, $80. There's the red one, $60, but they go up and up and up. You could realistically sell a regular Nokia 3315 phone if you have like the red one in a drawer somewhere. If it works, you could chuck it up for $100 and I guarantee you it will sell. These are very nostalgic. They don't work anymore in the sense of the technology, the cellular technology within it is now obsolete, but they still work. If you turn them on, you can play the games on the phone. You can listen to the old ringtones, the old message tones. You can see all the past messages and contacts. And people buy these because they're nostalgic and they're conversation starters and they're just fun to have. With that said, the phone that I bought had everything within the box. It had the box, the outer sleeve, it had the phone, the charger, the instruction manual, and a few other little bits and bobs. I turned the phone on and it worked. I went through all of it. I checked the messages, of course. I wanted to see if there was anything juicy there. There wasn't. There's no photos because this thing is so old. There's no camera. I went through all of the ringtones and the message tones just for a bit of nostalgia, just to hear them. I practiced typing because I don't know if you know, if you remember, if you don't. Typing on this phone was an absolute bitch. It had like 9 buttons and that represented the entire A to Z alphabet. So in order to type the letter C, you had to press the number 1 three times because ABC, number 1. It was honestly such a pain in the ass. I practiced typing. It took me like 3 minutes just to write like hello. But it's just a bit of fun, you know. So I put mine up for $150 on eBay. And you might be laughing, you might be thinking that's way too much money. Who's going to pay that for a phone that doesn't really work? Somebody will, I guarantee you. In one of these podcast episodes sometime soon, I'm going to say, guess which mobile phone sold for $150? Yes, the one that didn't work, the Nokia 3315, the indestructible brick from the 90s, from the early 2000s. That thing is going to sell. It's going to sell well. It's going to sell well. What does that even mean? It's just going to sell. Selling well isn't a thing. But yes, it's going to sell. I guarantee it. I put my money on it. I'm a gambling man. If you want to bet against me, hit me up. By the way, when I was looking up Nokia 3315s to check recent comps, I decided to comp out all the phones that I had when I was in school or when I was younger. One of the phones that I had was a Siemens C60. I think that's how you pronounce it. Siemens. If it's Siemens, then I'm sorry. That didn't have any comps, but the other phone that I had when I was in school was a Motorola Razr, and that was such a sleek phone. That thing looked killer. I do not have the words to describe it, but if you're near a computer, if you're near a phone, just type in Motorola Razr, and those things, man, they go hard on eBay now. If you have a Motorola Razr, you can sell it for about $80 on eBay, which is pretty good for a phone that, again, is obsolete technology. It won't work except for, you know, playing with it. But yeah, there was no Siemens C60. God, I hope it's not Siemens. I hope it's the other word that I said. There was none of those. There was a couple of Motorola Razrs, about $80. The other phone I had in school was the BlackBerry Bold. That is around $120, which is, again, that BlackBerry Bold was the move away from, you know, the 9-button alphabet. That was one of the that was the first phone I had that had the QWERTY keyboard, which is every single letter of the alphabet as a button, which made typing so much easier, made email so much easier. And that goes for, like I said, about $120 on eBay if you have it. These obviously need to be working. You probably sell some as untested because people could just like to have and display old phones. I think that if you come across these sort of old phones at garage sales, you should definitely pick them up. You know, they're something that you can just imagine seeing them for like $2 each. Somebody's like, oh yeah, it's my old phone collection when I was younger. Don't know if they work, whatever, you can have them. So yeah, pick them up at garage sales. Thrift stores, this one, the 3315 was $25. They've probably priced it that because the loose ones, untested, go for around there. But yeah, this works. It's tested. Everything in there, complete in box, just like anything, is going to be worth more money. So 25 into 150. I sort of hope it doesn't sell that quickly because I like having it. I like the conversation starter. I like being able to tell people, you know, I've got a new phone, asking them if my messages came through, and then pretending that, you know, I sent it off at 3315. Now, last week I told you about an Australian brand. The brand was Mambo. It was a Mambo shirt that I found in a thrift store for $22. It's described basically as art on a shirt. So art on fabric. They're Mambo Loud shirts. They sell for hundreds of dollars if you find rare ones. The one that I found, I listed for $160. So 22 and 100 into $160 if it sells. But this week I found another Mambo product. I didn't even know they did it in this product, but it was a Mambo skateboard, a mini skateboard. So not a full size skateboard, just a mini version. And I always like to check out skateboards in thrift stores, just because I think that there's some graphics on the bottom of skateboards that are worth more than others. You know, if you find a unique brand, if you find a design by an artist that is popular, they can be worth money. So I saw the top of this skateboard and I saw Mambo on the top, and I thought, you know, I didn't know if it was new, if it was old. I turned it over, I took a picture and I searched on Google Lens, and it came back as being a skateboard from 1987. So a piece of wood that was before I was even born. It had a graphic on it of a bald dude picking his nose, classic. It had the Mambo branding on it. It was just a unique piece of like graffiti art. It was from, like I said, 1987. There was one active listing and one sold listing. The sold listing was an auction. It had a bid for $70 plus postage, so $90 in total. But the active listing was actually by a Diary of a Flipper, who has listed it for $215, and it had 8 watches on it. So it's something that people are looking for. It's something that people are interested in. Yeah, he has it for $215. It's the only other one listed. Apparently it's rare. I thought, you know, I bought this thing for $3.99. What if I split the difference between the auction and the active listing? So I put mine up for $129.95. I think that it should sell. I don't know how quickly, just because I've never sold a skateboard before. It's something that I've never picked up. I do look at the graphics on skateboards because, you know, one day I might come across one that's incredibly rare. They're all worth a search. They're all worth a Google lens. Because, yeah, they might come back just like this one did, as being, you know, from the 80s and being worth hundreds of dollars. So I think that if I'm able to sell it for the $130 that I've got it up for, you know, $4 into $130, they're the margins. That's exactly what I want. I could go for the full $215 like Jutta from Diary of a Flipper, but the condition of this board is a bit so-so. You know, it's been thrashed about over the years. You know, it's older than me. I'm not in the best shape. This skateboard isn't in the best shape. I wouldn't ask for a 10 out of 10. This thing, I wouldn't ask for full price. So yeah, I've gone for $129.95. I think it will sell. Mambo seems to be a great brand that people look out for. If the t-shirts are art on fabric, then this is art on wood. If enough people like Mambo, there's no reason this shouldn't sell, because it's at a great price. It's not that much more than the sold listing. It's not going to come up that often because it's rare. So yeah, I honestly hate myself for buying this next item. I can't believe that I've put myself through this. I saw this jigsaw puzzle at a thrift store. I know what you're thinking. Why would I do this? It wasn't fully sealed. It wasn't sealed at all, really. It had no plastic on it. It was open. It didn't look like the box was even secure. I saw it in the thrift store and I said to myself, oh, there's definitely going to be pieces missing from this. There's no way that throughout the years there hasn't been a piece slip out through this massive open gap that can be had with this box. I checked the back of it and it said 1984. This thing is from 1984. The box wasn't fully sealed. I mean, I keep saying fully sealed. The box wasn't secure. It was open, really. I'll tell you what it was. It was a Redheads jigsaw. So it might not come to you straight away, but Redheads is a brand of matches. Everyone should be aware of this brand of matches. If you haven't, congratulations. You've avoided secondary lung cancer. But it has it's all red. It has a picture of a woman on the front. It's iconic. If you see it, you'll probably recognize the box. So it's essentially a life size. I was about to say life size version of the matches, but I mean, it's like 30 odd centimeters. It's like a bigger version of the matchbook. So there's an inside and there's a slip cover. So you slip the cover off and all the puzzles are inside like matches. It's fairly straightforward. And that's why I think that it's easy for the pieces to come out, because you slip the slip cover off, the pieces are just inside there. It had $6 on the back. It was from 1984. It's old. Like I said, I'm saying to myself, like, what are you doing? Why are you buying this? What? Like, there's going to be a piece missing. There's 100% going to be a piece missing. But I think, like, you know, I could take it home and I can count out the pieces. How long will it take me to count to 150? Like, surely not that long. But yeah, while I'm in the thrift store, I decided to just comp it, because I've bought and sold matchbooks before. It was the subject of one of the newsletters on Flip Weekly. I was wrong about matchbooks. I bought like 100 of them from a garage sale. I thought that I overpaid. I think I paid $10 for like 100 of them. I didn't think they would sell. I comped each and every one, thinking that maybe there was a winner. There wasn't. I put them on Marketplace and they were one of the most popular things I've ever put on Marketplace. They had, I think they had like 1,000 clicks And like I was about to say a million saves, but the math doesn't work out there. But they were so popular on Marketplace that I thought, these are matches. I've sold matchbooks. Maybe there's a collector's market for matchbooks. I mean, just basic common sense. So I comped this thing and I honestly couldn't believe what I saw. Like that sounds like podcast clickbait, but I honestly couldn't believe what I saw. I wish I could cut to ads right now so you guys have to wait, but it was one active listing, no sold listings, nothing else online, not even on like Reddit, no images, just one. And the title was very rare, 1984 Redheads Jigsaw Puzzle, Unopened Australian Collectible. And it was listed for $550. Now, I understand that people can list on eBay for whatever they want. You know, you could ask for $1,000 for my left foot on eBay, and it doesn't matter unless it sells for that price. But this thing had four people watching it. I mean, it's not 40, it's not a lot, but four people watched this thinking, you know, maybe I can buy this, or maybe I'd like to see what happens with it. And, you know, I thought, do I want to spend $6 on a puzzle and I could list it a bit cheaper than this $550 one? Like, maybe it is worth that much. I mean, deep down I was like, Matt, do not buy a fucking puzzle. But higher up in my body, but not deep down, higher up in my body, I was thinking like, do it, just fucking buy it, man. So I bought it, $6. I'm muttering under my breath as I'm walking out, just thinking like, why did you do this? You hate puzzles. I cannot stress enough how much I hate puzzles. I think everyone in my family hates puzzles too. I think there was a point in time where my mum hated puzzles so much that I thought it was funny to then buy her puzzles, but then it got to the point where it's like, yeah, it's not funny. Puzzles aren't funny. Buying puzzles for people aren't funny. I swear to God, I don't understand puzzles. I got this home and I thought, I need to count out 150 puzzle pieces. If it's complete, great. I can list it as complete. I started counting it. I get 149, 150, 151, 152, 153. I have more than 150 pieces in this. There's other random puzzle pieces in it. I can't just count to 150. I don't know which pieces belong to this puzzle. The only way to figure out if this puzzle is complete is by doing the puzzle. It sounds like a cruel joke. Matt hates doing puzzles. Therefore, Matt has to do a puzzle. I swear to God, once I started counting past 150, I was like, what is happening? Why is this 150 puzzle piece all of a sudden more? Like, they've put in more puzzle. They've put in the deep state. No. There was more than 150 puzzle pieces. So I decide that night I have to do this puzzle. And I mean, I'm hating every second of it, if that makes you feel better. But the other thing is, like, how does one do a puzzle comfortably? That's what I'm saying. How does one do a puzzle comfortably? What position are you supposed to be in when you do a puzzle? Are you supposed to be at a table or on the floor? Because the way that I did a puzzle was not comfortable. It sounds ridiculous because, I mean, it sounds like I'm doing a puzzle upside down, but really, I have a square coffee table and I have to bring the coffee table close to the lounge, and I had to bring it close to me so that I could see the pieces, and it was like pushing my legs like further and further apart, like I was riding a horse. And I swear to God, every 30 minutes I had to stand up, and I was walking as if I had just gotten off a horse. And I think that added on to how much I despise these fucking things. So I started doing the puzzle, and you know, I was telling people about it, and they were giving me deadlines, and and I had to take breaks because, you know, I hated doing it and my legs started hurting. It's just, people say that they're relaxing. I've never heard somebody say before that puzzles make their legs hurt. It must just be me. They must have puzzle stations or something. But that all happened, and I think it took me about 3 hours, which is, I think that's a long time for 150 pieces, because people do 1,000-piece puzzles and that takes, like, I don't know how long it takes. I don't have these conversations with people that do puzzles. I do not care how long it took them. I did, 150 pieces, and it took me hours. If you look on the newsletter, you'll be able to see what the puzzle is of. And it isn't of the front, which would have been easier because there's a picture of a face, there's words. The puzzle is of matches. So the puzzle is made up of the red tips of a match. That takes up 10% of the space. And you know what the bottom 90% of the space is? It's the fucking wood. It's just wood. It's like putting together a tree, like shredding a tree or grinding a tree down and then putting it back together. I did the outside pieces because that was the easiest, finding the outside pieces. But then again, it wasn't easy because I thought I was missing pieces or I had extra pieces. So it didn't work. And then I did the outside and I'm like, now what? How do I distinguish what is one matchstick from another? It made me angry. I have to admit it beat me. The puzzle did beat me, but I completed it. I completed it in one night. It took me hours. And of course there was pieces missing. I don't understand how I had more than 150 pieces and yet I was still missing pieces. That makes me hate puzzles even more. There was two missing pieces, and of course they weren't subtle ones. They weren't at the, like, in the corners. They were one directly smack bang in the middle, and the other one was like the top left that was, like, it stuck out. So I couldn't sell this as complete. I would never chuck it up for $550 because I don't think it's worth that. Not without seeing a sold comp. So after all of that, I've decided to put it up on eBay for $99.95. And funnily enough, it's had views and it's had watches. So, I mean, will this thing sell? My thought process when I bought this wasn't so much that it was the puzzle completed that would sell this product. I don't think the people that are going to buy this are going to be doing the puzzle. The entire reason to buy this is the box, because the box is, again, I'm going to say life size, but it's a life size matchbook, and having that on a shelf, I mean, it doesn't look too bad. It looks pretty cool. So because it looks like a matchbook, it has the little things on the side where you strike the matches. It just looks like a legit matchbook, but like enlarged like 20 times. This might actually sell missing two puzzle pieces, which would be very impressive. I don't know what it makes my hourly rate, having completed this in like 3 or 4 hours. It can't be good, but yeah. All right, moving on to what I sold this week, and the first item sold within 3 hours. It was an item that I picked up again this week. I actually sold on Marketplace, so the cash went straight into my account. I didn't have to wait for eBay to process, and the item was the Beauty and the Beast Polly Pocket. Not a Polly Pocket branded item, but the Polly Pocket. So we've got $3 into $80 in 3 hours. The buyer paid $10 for postage. When I'm on Marketplace and people ask about postage, I think for me to send something inside of like a prepaid satchel, it's like $10.90. But on Marketplace, when people ask, I just say, an even $10. I don't worry about the 90 cents. I think it makes it seem a bit easier and it just sounds like a smaller amount of money. Oh, sounds like it's a smaller amount of money because it is a smaller amount of money. But I think having those round numbers just makes it, the buyers are expecting a somewhat cheap price for an item like this. So I'm just going to give them $10 for, I'll eat the 90 cents because when you're selling something for 3 into 80, it's fine to like just incur another 90-cent fee. But yeah, 3 into 80, it had a tiny bit of interest on Marketplace. I think it was more of an eBay type product. It was on there for $100 on eBay, but $80 on Marketplace, I'm really happy with. It sold because of those little minifigures. I tell you, like just the case by itself, I probably on Marketplace would have only put it up for $20, I reckon. But having those two figures made it seem like well, made it complete, and a complete product is always going to outsell an incomplete product. So $80 on the exact same day, 3 into 80, wow. I would say keep an eye out. These are probably pretty rare to find in thrift stores. You'd be better off finding one in a garage sale, you know, kids moving out of the house, or somebody that had them as when they were younger. They might not see the value because, you know, they're a piece of plastic you can fit in your pocket. So that would be your best bet to find them. And if they have one, they might have two or three, even a huge collection. So I could see somebody buying a box of these things for like $50 and there being like $1,000 worth of value there. So if you're not familiar with what they are, Google image or jump onto eBay, type in Polly Pocket, type in, you know, Mighty Max. They're small, they're worth money. That's the type of item that I want to find. Something that doesn't take up space, but it holds so much intrinsic value. So Polly Pockets, hell yeah, buy them. This just shows you how much interest there still is in these things. Even though they're not that fun, is that, I don't know, is that right to say? Like, I can't even imagine playing with them when I was a kid, because I mean, they're just, yeah. Anyway, the next item that sold in 48 hours, again, something I picked up this week, and it was the VCR-DVD combo. It sold for full price, $169.95, so I was able to get that into a box, chuck it out. 48 hours it sold. These things, they go off. I honestly don't know who's buying them. I don't know why people are still buying DVDs. I think it might be because people like owning the physical media now, because streaming platforms they're unstable. They're chucking their prices up every week. Some platforms have the show or the movie that you want one week, other weeks it doesn't. So people having that physical media, I think, is the reason why they're so popular. And I mean, other reason for the VCR is the nostalgia of chucking in a VHS, or they're watching home videos. Either way, the combination of these two is a winning combination. It's something that you want to find. Thrift stores seemingly know about them now. I went to one, well, I've mentioned in this podcast that I went to one and they've had it up for $125. I took a photo of that too, because I thought it was a huge asking price, because I comped it online and it was worth less than that. Yeah, this thing went off like $169.95 in 2 days. You couldn't really ask for a better result than that from an item that I paid $30 for. Now, speaking of Mambo, in last week's podcast, in last week's newsletter, I told you about the Loud t-shirt that I found. Loud t-shirt is actually the brand of, or the sub-brand, I guess, of Mambo. They made these Loud t-shirts. They're when they say Loud, it's like a t-shirt you wear out and it stands out because of the graphics on the t-shirt. I found one in the thrift store, the very first one that I've ever found. I think it's a staple as a reseller to find one of these, because everyone talks about them and they're so rare. Jump onto YouTube and there's people that find these and you're like, how? I found it in a Lifeline op shop, which I thought was a bit bizarre, because this Lifeline is the one that tries to be, you know, the more antique-y type place. They seemingly look up everything. I was just surprised I was able to find it there. You know, when I went to the counter, the lady told me all about her husband that had these t-shirts, and she seemed to know about Mambo, and she was surprised that it lasted over a weekend. I think I went there on a Monday, and she said that she was surprised that it lasted over the entire weekend. And I was like, you know, thank God for me. I mean, not thank God for me, you know, good for me. So it sold. It took, it didn't take very long, a couple of days. It sold for full price. Full price was $159.95 after fees and after the post. You know, this just goes into a prepaid satchel and it goes off for like $10, maybe like 11 or 12 if you're not a Australia Post member. But yeah, these shirts, they weigh nothing. These Mambo Loud shirts don't weigh much because they're so thin and yeah, they can be posted for not much money. So yeah, it sold and maybe about $100 profit. Again, that's exactly what I'm wanting. It was a bit of a pay up for paying $22. I thought at the time that it was high. You know, it's a button up shirt. I don't really buy button up shirts from Lifeline, so I didn't know if this is their average price for a button up. or if they sort of knew what it was. Yeah, either way, 22 into 160 bucks, that's a shirt that you buy every single day of the week. The next item is something that I picked up this week that I didn't talk about in the what I bought section of this podcast, but I just want to quickly mention it. It was a mug. It's a mug. It's only so exciting. But I got it for $2 and it sold within 2 days for $40. I had it on eBay for $50, so it would have been a $2 into $50 mug. And what it was a sports club. So there's a sports club in Australia in Sydney called the Balmain Tigers. They're now the West Tigers. It's a national sport, so if you follow rugby league in Australia, you'll be familiar with this team. But it was a mug from 1998. One of the things that I like to do is familiarize myself with logos. You know, I come from a background that I guess appreciates logos, or at least am aware of logos. This sporting club, it's now a part of a competition called the NRL, the National Rugby League. However, over time it's evolved. So it didn't start as the National Rugby League. Before it was something else. Anyway, I saw this mug. It had ARL, which was Australian Rugby League. It had the logo. I knew that this logo meant that it was older, it was rarer. So I picked this up for $2. I didn't think too much of it. I think it was one of the first thrift stores I went into for the day, and I was like, you know, let's get the day started. Let's make a purchase. And so, yeah, I picked it up and it honestly surprised me. Some of these items that I buy that I think will go well on Marketplace, but they don't. And then other times, items that I don't think twice about, they go off. So this thing had a ton of views, it had saves, and it even had people sharing it. So this mug sold for $40. Somebody that bought it drove 45 minutes on a Sunday night to pick it up. So I was out on Sunday at a barbecue, and I told this person, you know, I'm not going to be home. I'll be out probably from 9 till 5. And if they want it, they can come pick it up after 5. They said that was fine. I didn't message them the day before or the day of, and they were the one that was pinging me, you know. And I was like, okay, this person's obviously serious. So I was like, come by. I just got home. And then they drove the 45 minutes to pick it up, just to pick up this mug. And, you know, the dude was excited for it. The dude was happy about it. He even asked me, like, have you got much interest? I'm surprised it didn't go sooner, all those sort of things. So it's just one of those things where it's good to know the history of logos, and it will help you out. You know, even when it comes to like what I just talked about, Mambo, if you know the Mambo logo now versus the Mambo logo from like 20 years ago, it'll help you see the tags and know whether or not it's worth picking up or worth scanning or worth taking a photo of. So yeah, I know that with a lot of sports, it helps me out when buying sports things. You know, I've bought a hat before in a thrift store for $4 that I just recognized the logo, that it was an old logo. I didn't even look it up, and it sold on eBay within like 20 minutes for $100. So it's good to know your logos. Of course, information is key, knowledge is key. The more info you have, the better you'll be in your reselling journey. But yeah, this thing, it was a mug. You can see the photos on the newsletter, flipweekly.com, and yeah, it's just something that you wouldn't think that would sell quickly. It's time for this week's reads, and this week we have an email from a gentleman named Ron. Ron comes at us with a subject line of general feedback, which is a very nice subject line. It makes me think that the email is going to be nice. But then it starts off with three words and three quotation marks of, are you nuts? So Ron is not happy, and I'm going to read through his email right now. I'm going to not read it verbatim because it is all over the place, but here we go. It goes like this. Are you nuts? Just stumbled across an article about you and your hustle with a link to your flip. Why are you telling people this? Can't you understand that by doing so, you are leading even more snouts to the trough? Not only more competition for us that are in the know, but you as well. It has already gotten much harder to find a bargain in recent years due to people like you blabbing. And the people working in these shops are wising up too, and researching everything and putting the prices up. That's if it hits the shelves at all, instead of being offered on their websites with grossly inflated prices. Why? Because of blabbermouths like you, who need to get their jollies off and make themselves famous as influencers. Well, you are only making it harder for yourself, because you'll be scratching your head soon, wondering why it's so hard to get a good buy, and all this bragging about side hustles is going to bring the tax man to your door. Idiot. I can scarcely believe that someone can really be that stupid. There's one rule that applies here, as in any case when you find a gold egg-laying goose. When you're on a good thing, keep your fucking trap shut. Wow, and that was the email from Ron. He is not a happy chappy. I mean, where do you even go from this? Ron is obviously concerned. Ron is, this is a fear-based email. He has a good thing going and he thinks that I'm going to ruin it. He says that the staff are wisening up by researching the items, which is my fault apparently for telling people, oh, this might be worth some money. I don't think that Ron is thinking straight, because he's obviously very concerned, and I don't blame him. I think that if his business is based on keeping people in the dark or keeping people dumb, you know, that's like a politician's approach to work, right? Like you need to be learning too. You can't just be trying to keep people down. I think that if Ron goes into a thrift store and he sees other people there, he gets upset. He thinks that every thrift store should be this Ron's land. I don't know. Ron, you cannot keep all the valuable stuff for yourself. You need to share, or you need to learn to share, because when you go into a thrift store and people are looking for stuff, they're looking for things that they're not going to pay full price for. And, you know, you're going to take a hit, bro. It's not that simple anymore. You know, people in 2025 are looking for ways to save money. They're looking for ways to get high quality at low prices, which is where a thrift store usually comes into it. So blaming me for those issues is just I'm the scapegoat. I'm the person that you email with your caps lock just stuck. Like, dude, unstick your caps lock. You know, you don't need to put like 10 exclamation marks at the end of every sentence. I get it when you call me a well, I won't say it on the podcast, but There were some words in there that I filtered out. I think that Ron has his old quote unquote gold egg laying goose, and he doesn't want anyone to get in the way of that. I have to assure Ron that we are buying things from thrift stores and garage sales and selling them online for a profit. This is not gold egg laying goose. I mean, this is side hustle. This is working hard. This is, you know, just trying to make some money on the side. We're not becoming millionaires buying a fucking pair of jeans from a thrift store and selling them for a $20 profit online. I think your anger, Ron, is misplaced. I think that you are in a place of hurt right now. I hope that you are okay. I hope you've also opened a window to let some steam out, because it's all over the place, man. I didn't reply to your message via email because I wanted to reply on the podcast there, because I think that in a public forum, this is a very popular topic. It's something that a lot of people say. If you go on the flipping subreddit, people don't like to talk about where they get things from. I think that is a form of gatekeeping. People don't want to say where they get things from. The people don't want to talk about their categories. I don't agree with that. I think the more knowledge that's out there, the better. I don't believe in shutting the gate behind myself. I think that the notion that I have mine, you can't have yours, is wrong. I'm all for educating people. And yeah, I think that saying don't tell people that they should buy this because I want it for myself is wrong. Maybe not wrong. Like, I'm not saying you're a bad person. I just think that there is enough shit in this world that you can share. Think of the landfill. It's overflowing. There is enough shit in this world to buy and sell all of your category 10 times over. You don't have to gatekeep it. If you can't find it today, you can find it tomorrow. Think of how many people there are in this world. Think of how many thrift stores there are in this world. Most people are just trying to get through life. They're not thinking about, oh, I can resell this for a $20 profit. I think just chill. Ron, I think you should definitely chill because you seem like it's a matter of life and death. It's an incredibly rude email. I think maybe get some better email etiquette. If you're willing to keep sending emails like this, please just send them to me. I find them funny. I love your quote-unquote general feedback. So matt@flipweekly.com, jump on the website flipweekly.com. I love to hear from you, Ron. Please keep safe. Please look after yourself. And if anyone else has any stories or knows if Ron is okay, please let me know. All right, that is the podcast for this week. Thanks again for listening. Remember, you can enter the competition giveaway on Instagram. Just go to instagram.com/flipweekly. Be sure to rate or review or comment on this podcast. I think the ratings and the reviews will help. Comments for the engagement probably help. This is the second ever podcast I've done. It's rambly, it's loose. There's some swearing in it. It'll only get better from here. If you have any stories or questions or whatever, shoot them through to matt@flipweekly.com or go to the website and submit. Thanks again for listening. I will see you again next week. Thank you.